Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and here once again to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson, our Acting Deputy Editor. Sophia, why don't we kick off by you telling us a bit more about this week's interviewee?
Yeah, so this week, Charlotte, our Features Director, caught up with Neil Emmett and Dudley Savage from the charity AMI Kids. The charity was founded in Florida years ago when a judge kept seeing the same kids turning up in front of him in the courtroom. He asked a friend with a yacht to allow them to help out and work on it to give them something to do and hopefully keep them out of trouble. And the plan worked. Today, it's a huge organisation with outputs in numerous states across America. And they have a fantastic success rate. 70% of the kids that leave there, they're all referred to them in the first place from the court system, don't reoffend the following year. They rely on yacht donations, which is something that also can potentially work out brilliantly for owners with difficult yachts to shift, as it can offer tax breaks, etc. So they talked to Charlotte a bit about that and how yacht donation can work, and also talk about some of their impressive case studies, which includes one of their former children who now owns a successful shipyard and sells his own yacht. So a nice good news story, hopefully.
Yeah, so the lesson is get kids on boats. I mean,
it could be... Kids doing manual labour, I think, is the moral of this story. Is that something you employ with your children, Stuart?
My kids, we get them on boats as often as possible. Actually, I've got a story. So we got... a few years ago, we were lucky to be invited out on a charter yacht in Indonesia, in Komodo.
Possibly the best work perk.
Yeah, it was a good perk. And so my daughter, Emma, she was the oldest. I think she was turning 8, I think, at the time. And she, the guys organising the trip said, well, what would you like for your birthday? And she said, a Minecraft cake. And I don't think they'd ever known. They had no idea what Minecraft was. Anyway, so we get to this beach one day, this beautiful pink sand beach, and they've set up this kind of picnic area for us. And it's all very lovely. And it's Emma's birthday. And then out of nowhere appears this beautiful Minecraft cake. And it turns out the chef had to fly with it from Bali on his lap. He had to get it specially made in Bali, fly out to where we were with the cake on his lap. And so we each had some cake and we're all incredibly grateful. And then at the end, there was quite a lot left. And they said, Emma, what would you like to do with the rest of the cake? And she said, she kind of waved her hand and said, oh, well, the staff can have some. and I thought, oh, God, this is not good. So we tried to reinforce the point with Emma that this was not normal. This is not the new normal. And that she should never wave her hand and basically let them eat cake. It was a let them eat cake moment. And yeah, not great. Not great.
Maybe get them into some crew training soon.
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as she turns 18, she'll be working the bowels of a superyacht somewhere as third engineer or fourth engineer, working her way up. I think that'd be good for her. Anyway, enough about my kids and Minecraft cakes. We actually have some very sad news for you. The Superyacht Design Festival, which was due to take place next week in Milan, has been postponed until June 2022. As anyone who follows the news knows, the COVID situation in Europe is getting bleaker by the day, and a number of key speakers and delegates quite understandably pulled out of the event, citing health concerns and the fact that new restrictions are being imposed all the time. So we didn't have much choice but to postpone. Personally, incredibly gutted. We worked so hard to line up some amazing speakers, but hopefully we'll just kind of be able to pick up the whole program and drop it into June 2022. So yeah, some very sad news, but regretfully, not much we can do about it. It's not a great picture out there for COVID rates in Europe at the moment, and people were understandably very, very worried about travel.
On a lighter note, Stuart, you're wearing a tie. Now, this is sort of unheard of in the office, to the point where I think it's been commented on by pretty much everyone that has come into the office this morning. What's the reason?
Well, you can't wear a tie. You can't even dress up that smart, honestly. I don't know. It's like most workplaces, I think. You slightly go off-piste and then everyone thinks, oh, he's got a job interview or something.
I don't think it's you. I think it's you are famously never seen in a tie.
No.
There's members of the team that could come in a tie. You do not wear ties.
I don't wear ties. But I got a lovely lunch invite today. and I'm going to a club in town which requires me to wear a tie, which is why I'm wearing a tie. I'm going to see the lovely owners of the 56 meter alloy yachts Mondango 3. They're a delightful couple who like to eat in places that require me to wear a tie. So, but the lunch will be delicious, I'm sure. Another engagement I'm actually really looking forward to is tomorrow, or today rather, because this comes out on Friday. I'm jumping on the 55 meter Lursen Moonsand because she's on the Thames at the moment. So we're cruising from Butler's Wharf down to Canary Wharf, which should take about an hour. So I've been on super yachts on the Thames many times, but never actually cruised on a super yacht on the Thames. So it would be really special. So I'm going to get on as the sun goes down over London and the lights come on, and there'll be plenty of Christmas lights out too. So that would be really nice. And Dickie and Simon, the boat's designers, will be on board as well. And I'll be dragging along our social media manager, Claire. So hopefully we'll try and capture as much of it as we can. So please do keep an eye on our social channels.
Yeah, I think I cruised down the Thames on a kind of party boat quite a few years ago. I think this might be a slightly different vibe.
I don't know. Let's see what happens. I mean, if they break out the beers, we'll see. We'll see if Sir Dickie and Simon turn into a party boat, but I suspect not. Another big boat on the Thames at the moment actually is the Amels, the 89 meter Amels, Here Comes the Sun. So a friend of mine who work in town keeps sending me photos of it saying, who owns this then? That's as sophisticated as their questioning gets. Not who built it, or, you know, what is it, or where's it been? Who owns it? It's always the first question. So but it's great to see her on the Thames because she's very recently completed a significant refit. So 6 meters were added to her stern. She was designed, of course, by Tim Haywood. And he would have actually been one of our key speakers at next week's Super Yacht Design Festival. And we did a bit of a dress rehearsal for his talk. And we discussed Here Comes the Sun, because obviously we asked Tim to pick out some of the iconic designs he had come up with over the years. And one of them was the very first Amels 171. And which kind of led to a series, the limited edition series of Amels, of which Here Comes the Sun was one some years later. So one of the things Tim talked about was in all his designs, he tries to lower the bulk of the superstructure because obviously we're working with some very big volume boats, or he has worked with some very big volume boats. And Here Comes the Sun, by adding that 6 meter extension to the stern, has actually kind of lowered the bulk even more. So Tim actually thought the extension made it look even better. But while we're talking of Mr. Haywood, Sophia, have you got a favourite Tim Haywood design?
It's a tough question. I think I'd probably have to say Planet Nine. I think she's a big part of that trend of sort of super explorers that really, the last 5 years, if you look at her and yachts like Ulysses and other yachts, have really kind of moved forward that whole part of the industry. And I just love her combination of explorer capabilities with all the luxuries that you'd also expect to find on a super yacht.
Yeah, she is very no-nonsense, Planet Nine. And I know the EOS guys have worked with her quite a lot down in the Southern Ocean. She's done some cool stuff, but I don't agree with your choice.
No, I didn't expect you to.
I don't think it's a lovely boat, but I don't think it's necessarily an archetypal Tim Haywood kind of boat.
I think that's why I quite like it.
Yeah, maybe. I think for me, it's Polaris, naturally, because I think that is the absolute exemplar of a big boat that looks low, where he's the lines just keep it quite low to the water and very, very sleek and cool. And then there's, of course, Symphony, which I've got a very soft spot for, because I spent quite a lot of time on her not long after she was delivered, and then again in Barcelona when I saw her. She's just a really beautiful boat, inside and out. And one of the things I really... So up on the... I love teppanyaki. So it's got a really cool teppanyaki grill at the top of the boat. And behind this teppanyaki bar, there's this kind of resin beach that Tim created that flows into a spa pool that is very, very cool. Anyway, just a beautiful boat, I think, at Symphony. Just proportionally, the lines, all very neat.
I was feeling shallow then for choosing Planet Nine because of her cool explorer capabilities. And then you brought up teppanyaki, and now I don't feel shallow.
I mean, who commissions a super yacht without a teppanyaki grill, honestly? Is it even a grill? Hot plate. Teppanyaki hot plate. Teppanyaki station.
I don't know, we're down a weird rabbit hole.
If you're not commissioning a super yacht with a teppanyaki station, something is going wrong in the commissioning process. Right, well, Pelorus and Symphony, obviously very big boats. Symphony featuring in the top 101 list of super yachts. We've got some new entries this year. So the January issue of the magazine, which we are just polishing off now, features our annual big list of the top 101 super yachts delivered in 2021. And we'd also thought we'd look at some of the big super yachts being delivered next year. But Sophia, why don't we just talk about the ones making the list, the new entries in the top 101 list this year?
Yeah, so we've got Solaris, which is the big 140-meter explorer from Lloyd Verth. Apo, we go with Apo rather than
Afo.
Afo, sorry, I think I butchered that last week as well. The very recently delivered 115-meter Lursen. Then we've got the 94.75-meter Fedship Bliss. Then we've got another Fedship, which is the 94-meter Viva, which was at Monaco Yacht Show. Then we've got yet another Fedship, 88.38-meter Zen. So those are the new entries on the list to look out for this year. In a way, I felt like there would be more, but perhaps.
Well, there usually is more, actually. There's usually 8 or 9, but because there's only, well, how many? There's five new entries to the top 101 list this year. It's actually allowed us to give them each a really big, beautiful spread in the magazine. So the feature looks wonderful, actually, because each gets this massive full bleed DPS image. But next year, I tell you what, if this year's Fedship's year, because they've had 3 new entries to the top 101, next year is very much Ocean Co's year. But first of all, let's have a look at some of the other boats coming out. So Northern Sun 3, so this is an amazing reverse-bowed 107-meter explorer from Lursen, is being built for Canadian John Risley. So that's coming out. That should be delivered next year. There's Project 1010, the biggest ever Fedship at 118 meters. We'll see that. Another flagship project, but this time for Abeking and Rasmussen, is the 118.2-meter Project 6507. And interestingly, the design of this boat comes from Joseph Durand, who is better known as a furniture designer. His biggest yacht project to date was a 26-meter, so this is something of a step up, 26 meters to 118.2 meters. There you go. I look forward to learning about the challenges he faced doing that, but that's supposed to be a very... I think we're expecting that to be an Explorer 2. But really, 2022 is going to be Ocean Co's year. So they're going to deliver no fewer than 400-meter plus super yachts next year. So let's go through them. There's Project Y1050, which is at 105 meters long. Project Y719, which is 117 meters long. Project Y720 is 109 meters long, but the big news, and one a boat we talked about at length on previous podcasts, is Project Y721, which is a 127 meter long sailing yacht, understood to be owned by none other than Mr. Jeff Bezos. So they're 4 really exciting boats coming out of the Ocean Coast sheds, being delivered next year. But that sailing boat, it's all about the sailing boat next year, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's going to understandably take all the media attention. But 4 yachts over 100 metres. I mean, can you imagine, you know, even 10 years ago, we said that one yard was going to be doing that. It just seems incredible.
Well, do you remember in your interview with Dr. Al Barwani, which is in the current issue, didn't he say something like when he bought the yard, they didn't have, there were no expected deliveries for 12 or 18 months after he bought it, and then suddenly
he bought it mid financial crash, backed that the orders would come back, and they did, and they are just continuing to do so. Yeah, they're obviously doing something right.
Yeah, they have. I mean, they've carved themselves out a very impressive market in that 100 meter plus space, and the projects they're doing are really, really fascinating, every single one. Massive congrats to Dr. Al Barwani, friend of the podcast, friend of the mag, and great to see all the success coming his way and Ocean Co's way at the moment.
Yeah, I think he'd be the first to say that it's the team at Ocean Co. I think he very much takes he's hands on in that he knows everything that's going on, but he's hands off in that he lets the experts do what they're best at.
That's how I approach management as well.
No comment at this point.
Right, next, in noting a script to talk about cyclists. Why on earth are we talking about cyclists, Sophia?
We're talking about cyclists because, as you mentioned, the January issue is literally going out the door. So we're now looking at all the features for the February issue, which includes a Voyage feature on the rise of cycling and superyachts, and therefore the best places to cycle from your superyacht. I actually interviewed Nona this week for a profile, which will be coming up in one of the future ones, and he was saying how much he loves having his bike on board. He's actually got an electric bike, but he says it just gives him a chance to explore places in the way he hadn't before. And I can see that with a yacht. You know, you go and sit in a port, but do you actually get on shore? And if you get on shore, it's quite hard to go that far, whereas if you've got a bike or an electric bike even, you can go even further. We've done some delving into the top routes in Mallorca and sort of the rest of the Med. And we also, it's clearly not just the owners that are into it. There's people across the industry, which you can see with the London to Monaco bike ride, which has now raised over 1.7 million for the Blue Marine Foundation. Stuart, we'll be seeing you setting off on two wheels to Monaco anytime soon.
No, absolutely not. But mainly because of my aversion to Lycra. I mean, I'd do it if I could just wear like a t-shirt and a normal pair of shorts. But I just can't. I can't wear Lycra. It's awful. And I worry about all the middle-aged men I see clogging up the streets of Surrey, squeezed into their Lycra every weekend. Some of it's not very flattering. And I would just be another out-of-shape middle-aged man squeezed into unflattering Lycra.
I mean, I was going to say, I think you should be more worried if you see middle-aged men not in Lycra, because I think that's when more damage is done. But I feel this is a slippery slope that we're taking ourselves down.
Definitely. But I do like the idea of an electric bike. Some of those new mountain bikes with power packs, they're really quite cool. And I kind of get the freedom and the opportunities for exploration that they give you. Because it's a bit of a faff, isn't it? You might more in a very cool place, and then if you really want to explore, you walk or you rent a car maybe. But having that opportunity to just buzz off on an electric bike and take you further than you would otherwise go on a normal bike is really cool. So it's definitely opened up these coastal destinations a bit more, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Oh yeah, I can hugely completely see the appeal.
Alrighty. Let's crack on with this week's news, Sophia.
Yeah, so we're going to start with the news that new pictures of Lursen Explorer Octopus have been revealed. Camper Nicholson's have released new images of the 126-metre yacht, which was, of course, commissioned and owned by Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen. The yacht's obviously changed ownership earlier this year and is now available for charter for the first time, and will embark on a 2-year round-the-world tour beginning in January 2022. The photos reveal some of her standout features, which include a glass-bottomed underwater observation lounge, a cinema, and a fully kitted-out dive centre. The images also show part of her entertainment deck, where guests will find a heated freshwater swimming pool, which has a retractable glass floor that can be raised to deck level to extend the entertaining space if wanted. There's also a bar, spa pool, and pizza oven in that space as well. A couple of the team are actually going to be fortunate enough to get on board Octopus on Monday for a future feature in the magazine. Stuart, how envious are you that you weren't able to make that trip and have that look around?
Well, thanks for rubbing it in, Sophia. Ridiculously envious. So I think, as mentioned at length previously on the podcast, I did sneak aboard her a few years ago at the Monaco Yacht Show to have a really good look around, which is a great experience. I love that boat. Wrongfully beaten, obviously, by Eclipse in the famous World Cup of Superyachts earlier this year. In the big grand final, Eclipse beat Octopus. I was obviously very much rooting for Octopus. But very jealous. The reason I didn't go was because I was due to fly to Milan for the Superyacht Design Festival, which is now, of course, postponed. So in hindsight, I perhaps could have gone to see Octopus. But I'm very excited that a couple of the other team members are going to get their own opportunity to have a look on board. And so that feature will be, I'm not sure when it'll be coming out in the magazine.
One of the spring issues.
But it'll be a big deal, though.
Yeah, I equally had to turn it down because I worked out that Marseille and Milan in a week was a stretch too far with family commitments. But
yeah, so
we'll wait for the feature to come in and read all about it.
Yeah, absolutely. But great that it's so exciting that she's available for charter, and that just gives us an opportunity to shout about her as well, which is fantastic. Next up, we have Heesen's flagship 80-metre Project Cosmos has been technically launched and named Galactica, following in the series. Obviously, there was Galactica Star, Galactica Supernova, and now Cosmos is Galactica. The yacht, which has some fairly sharp-looking teeth painted onto its hull bulb, was unveiled and launched at the Dutch shipyard. She was sold in March 2018 and features exterior styling by a British studio, Winch Design, with Sino responsible for the yacht's interiors. Galactica will supersede the 70.07-metre Galactica Supernova as the yard's flagship when it is delivered next year. Heesen Chief Executive Arthur Brouwer said, "Today we are celebrating the launch of a unique yacht. Unique not only for our shipyard, as she is the largest we have ever taken on and represents the pinnacle of our achievements to date. Cosmos is also unique in the industry, the largest and fastest aluminium yacht in her class ever built." So following the launch, Galactica will be prepared for sea trials in the North Sea, which are set to begin in February. So we'll obviously try and grab as many photos and videos of that as possible. Delivery is scheduled for April 2022.
So next up, we have the Power multi-hull yacht, a Sea and Lady, has been listed for sale. Now, this isn't technically news, as she was actually put on the market earlier this summer, but she has just received a €3 million price drop, and she's been gathering a lot of attention on the website this week when we covered it. She was built by Chinese yard Pride Mega Yachts to a design by Ian Mitchell, and the 88.15-metre yacht was delivered in 2004. Her unique shape, which is why she's been gathering quite so much attention, is based on a bamboo outrigger canoe, which are known for their stability and long range, and they've been used for centuries in the South Pacific. The distinctive design has solved many typical problems for yachts, such as space, noise, stability and anchor, and also while underway, or so the designers claim. She provides accommodation for 18 guests in 8 spacious staterooms, of which the master cabin is an incredible 160 square metres in size with a private balcony and office. She's listed for yacht for sale with the Raffles Yacht Group, and she's now asking €30,500,000. Little final trivia question for you, Stuart. Does this price mean she comes in our list of the top 50 most expensive yachts for sale or not?
Oof. I would say yes.
No, she's just outside. So currently at number 50, we have a La Familia, which is asking €35 million. So wow. She just slips underneath it.
I bet she's one of the biggest yachts for sale at the moment, though.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, beauty is in the eye of the beholder on this one. I mean, she's quite a special looking thing, but you know, I mean, masses of space on board. I mean, you just look at the pictures. She is just the acreage is outrageous as a consequence of the design. But you know, you've got to get over that design. I'm not sure I could, but clearly there's always an owner out there for unusual looking boats, and she's certainly one. So frankly, if you're looking for a very stable boat that you can play football inside, then this one's for you.
Have you checked whether she's got a grill, Stuart? What are her barbecuing facilities?
Well, that's my main objection. I didn't see any teppanyaki options.
So you're out.
I'm out. Otherwise, you know, the check was written. Last story this week is Van der Valk has revealed the interiors of their 34-metre expedition yacht Lady Lean. As the custom 34-metre Explorer yacht was commissioned by a repeat client and designed by Guido de Groot, Diana Yacht Design and Ginton Naval Architects. The interior, designed in collaboration with Carla Gilham, is Art Deco inspired, according to the yard. This manifests in features particular to the 1920s and 1930s, including curved walls, fluted wood, and metal touches in champagne gold. The effect is calm, timeless, and welcoming, according to the designer. So I was actually at Van der Valk the other day, paid a visit to the shipyard, but Lady Lean wasn't in because she was out on sea trials, which was a shame because I really was quite looking forward to seeing her. But just really happy that Dutch yard, very pedigreed, prestigious Dutch yard, are doing so well, which is fantastic. Alrighty, let's move on to the data story, which is brought to you, as ever, by Boat Pro. I didn't say Broke Pro this week, did you notice? The superyacht industry's leading market intelligence platform. So this week we thought we'd look at superyacht movements in the traditional season running from May to September. So we did this to see how COVID has affected cruising patterns, and it turns out it did quite significantly, as you'd expect. Usually these numbers wouldn't fluctuate too much, but they have in the last few years. So we're just going to concentrate on three of those: Croatia, Greece, and Florida, because they, I think, showed the most interesting increases and decreases relatively. So in 2019, in Croatia, there were 1,016 superyacht movements. And remember in 2020, when COVID struck, Croatia was one of the territories that remained open or opened early in the season, which meant that there was an 11.6% increase in Supiant movements in 2020, which only increased again to 23.3% growth in 2021. So in 2019 in Croatia, there were 1,016 Supiant movements. It climbed again in 2020 and climbed again in 2021 to 1,399. So that's about 400 new Supiants that are cruising in Croatia in 2021 compared to 2019, which is really interesting.
It's a big number.
Yeah, it is a big number, especially for Croatia, which, you know, has a fairly, which is a lovely coastline. But when you compare it to territories like Italy, which is a massive coastline, the numbers are quite strong. Then we're going to look at Greece. So in 2019 in Greece, there were 2,749 Supiant movements. That dropped about 20% in 2020, but then jumped massively in 2021. So it went from 2,749 in 2019, it dropped to 2,232 Supiant movements in 2020, but then leaped to 3,340 Supiant movements, which is a 50% increase in 2021. And again, that was a consequence of Greece opening its borders to cruising earlier than others. So Supiants flooded to Greece, resulted in probably Greece's best Supiant season ever, really, for visiting traffic. There were just loads of boats in Greece this summer. And Florida we've picked out as well. So we looked at Supiant movements in Florida between May and September in each of the years, 2019, 2020 and 2021. And there's one figure I wanted to pick out. So there's not a lot of difference, frankly, between 2020 and 2021, but there was a massive difference between 2019 and 2020. So in 2019, in those 4 months, 5 months rather, there were 3,020 Supiant movements in Florida, in Floridian waters. That jumped 40% in 2020 to 4,639. Do you know why that was?
Is that yachts not coming across to the Med?
Yachts not coming across to the Med. So loads of yachts that didn't come across to the Med because of COVID in 2020 stayed in home waters and were used in home waters, which resulted in a massive uplift in the numbers of Supiants moving around. So just to repeat that again, so there were 3,320 Supiant movements in Florida waters in 2019, which jumped to 4,639 in 2020, a 40% increase. And those numbers have stayed steady in 2021. So again, in this season, lots of boats from America decided not to cross, again resulting in a very good couple of months for Florida. So there you go. Just some little insights there into how COVID has affected cruising patterns. And some territories have really benefited. Others have taken a bit of a hit. But Croatia, Greece and Florida, three of those ones doing quite well out of it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see next summer whether more of that American fleet does come back to the Med, and whether after a couple of years it might almost flip the other way and you'll have a kind of bumper Med season because owners will have missed it, or maybe they've discovered the delights of US waters and are never leaving again.
Yeah, exactly right. We'll just have to wait and see. So this time next year, we'll look at the stats again. Alrighty, that's it from Safari and I this week. Stay tuned for Charlotte's interview with the guys who head up AMI Kids.
So I'm joined here today by Neil Emmett, partner at Superyacht Sales and Charter, and Dudley Savage, yacht donation facilitator for the charity AMI Kids. These guys are going to be telling us all about how you can leave your super yacht to charity and why you should do it, and the answers aren't necessarily what you'd expect. Firstly, a bit of background on them. Neil's firm, Superyacht Sales and Charter, donated a 36.6-metre Benetti to the charity back in 2019, as well as a 25.6 Wipers Woodsend in 2021. He was aware of the charity for many years before taking the plunge and now sits on the board as one of the organisation's trustees in Fort Lauderdale. Dudley, meanwhile, has been involved since the 1970s and has worked on some of AMI Kids' most significant donations to date, including, for example, a 27.7-metre Moonin, a 28-metre custom Brooklyn sailboat, a 27.6-metre Hargrave, and that's just to name a few of them. And originally when he was joining us for the podcast, he was getting up at 5 a.m. because he was recording from Denver. I don't know where you are now, Dudley. Hopefully it's not so early now.
No, actually, I'm still in Denver, but it's 9 o'clock in the morning now, so we're all set.
Positively human. Well, thanks guys both for joining us, and I'm really looking forward to this chat, having learnt a bit about AMI Kids myself ahead of time. So I thought we'd start at the very beginning for people who are listening. Can you just explain in a nutshell what AMI Kids does?
Okay. AMI Kids started in 1969 in South Florida, and at the time Judge Frank Orlando, circuit court judge, saw these same kids, high school kids, coming through his courtroom. And they were from very affluent neighborhoods, but just couldn't understand. They just had too much time on their hands during the weekend. And he was good friends with Senator Lou Delapart. And over a golf game, Lou said, you know, we have I know of a college that has a reef program, and they're working on the reef program. Why don't we see if we can't get the kids on board to help the college students? And as it turns out, Frank never saw the kids come through his courtroom again. So months later, they went to Tallahassee and they got the seed money and the very first program, Associated Marine Institute, started in Deerfield Beach. That was in 1969. And today, last year we celebrated our 50th anniversary, and it's truly an amazing organization because we work through the court system, and we help kids recognize that they do have a potential in life and to achieve a new purpose. And so often these kids are neglected. We're dealing quite often with kids that are no longer in the school system. And we have a personal growth model that we developed over the year. And it's been tremendously successful. So we own and operate 45 schools now around the country. And in the past, since 1969, gosh, we've helped over 140,000 boys and girls get a new purpose in life. So it's really a great organization.
I mean, that's a huge number of children to have helped. And when I was doing my research for this, I remember someone else I spoke to at AMI Kids said, you know, one of the most rewarding thing is when you're out on the water or doing these programs with these children, you get to see them become children again, which I just thought was such a lovely thing to say, that these children, who many of whom have had to be somewhat more adult beyond their years to deal with certain issues, you know, when they're out in a boat, they're just like the rest of us. They get to kind of, you know, play and have fun and be kids, which I think is just so lovely.
Absolutely. And you know, what's really amazing is across the board, on an average, those that complete our programs, 77%, when they successfully complete them, do not reoffend within the first year. And when you look at that stat across the board in the juvenile justice system, that's an amazing rate. But our dedicated staff of almost 1,000 people throughout the 9 different states and 45 programs say these kids recognize that they do have a value and they can be successful. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful process.
I mean, 77%, there's no greater proof of what you guys are doing than that. That's incredible. And you must all be so proud of that. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about, because I know, so essentially yacht donation makes up a large part of your funding. And obviously you've had some really significant boats kind of pass through your hands. Can you explain how it works, why people do it, what the process is? Because when I heard about this for the first time, I found it really fascinating.
Well, it's a great alternative for an individual who is maybe considering just getting out of boating altogether, or possibly moving on to another boat. I call it the convenience factor. And so often people have owned vessels where they've put in a substantial amount of money, and the reality is they're never going to get their money invested back in return. And then plus they have the holding cost and then the crew cost. So for a contribution to be a safe alternative, it's amazing when you consider, since we started receiving yachts and donation, we received over 6,000 vessels. And to our knowledge, We have never had a donor have their donation devalued or disallowed by the IRS. So for an individual who is in a position to utilize a tax deduction, quite often the appraised value will be significantly more than what the actual cash value, but then you add in the convenience factor that they can, from the time of appraisal, they can gift the boat to AMI Kids and not have the holding cost of waiting for a year or two for the boat to sell. And quite often the boat doesn't sell for what it's originally listed for, whereas the vessel might appraise for quite a bit more than what they actually have, what they could achieve by a sale.
And so in some cases, I remember I was kind of gobsmacked, in a very few cases, it actually works out more worthwhile for an owner to donate it and get the tax break that you have in the States than it would do to kind of sell it and keep dropping the price lower and lower. Is that correct in sort of very, very rare cases?
Yeah, absolutely. And for somebody who might have purchased their boat new and it's now 4 or 5 years old, the individual, and again, I'm not giving tax advice by any means, but I can certainly share what has general what the process looks like. But the in the case of somebody who has invested millions of dollars into their boat since the time that they bought it either new or used, the reality is that they're not going to achieve most likely anywhere near what they have invested. So, but however, with the appraisal process, the actual material improvement investment that they've made, the appraised value could keep it to a standard where it's certainly a lot more feasible if they're in a position to utilize the tax deduction to go the route of contribution. Owners, when they work with AMI Kids, they don't have to pay a brokerage commission. And quite often, it really works to their advantage. But would love to chat at some point about the convenience for someone who might be looking at getting into another boat. So, and when you look at, if you have a crew of 4 or 5 or 7 people on board, and you're not sure what type of boat you're going to get into and how long it's going to take to sell your existing boat, the opportunity to know that when you do find the next boat, you can then close and have your crew then transfer right over to the new vessel, and then AMI Kids takes possession of the vessels being donated.
And there's a kind of process to it, isn't it? So the brokers get compensated as they normally would. So they have an incentive to kind of be involved and make the sales happen. And then the new owners sort of lease it for a few years, don't they, before they officially own the yacht?
Yeah. And as far in reference to compensation, we offer the brokerage community a finder's fee. And so they receive a fee for bringing the vessel in. And then AMI Kids, the integrity of our process and the reason that we have such an unblemished record is we follow the IRS guidelines and we do what they call material improvements to the vessel. And generally, that's somewhere around 10% of the value of the boat. So on a $2 million boat, we'll invest around $200,000 to materially improve the boat. So once that the improvements are completed, then we offer the boat for a lease. And the reason the lease comes into play is that any vessel that gets contributed to a nonprofit, if ownership changes hands within 3 years, the donor can only utilize what the vessel sells for. So when a vessel gets contributed and then owned for a period of 3 years, which AMI Kids will commit to doing, we maintain ownership. But during that 3 years after the material improvements are completed, we offer the boat for lease through the broker who brought the boat in. So an individual would then lease the boat. They would have care, custody, and control of the boat. the vessel would be insured in their name. However, AMI Kits maintains ownership of the vessel. So for an individual that's leasing the boat, quite often, majority of the times, they're the ones that end up purchasing the boat at the end of the three-year term. If it happens to be a vessel that's in Florida, being a nonprofit tax-exempt organization, there's no sales tax on the lease or on the final payment. So for AMI Kids versus the owner of the boat, quite often is emotionally attached because if the boat has been used within the family, or they're emotionally attached because they're an investment. For AMI Kids, it's a business transaction. And we're looking to, once we receive the boat, to complete our material improvements as soon as possible, and then to get the boat back out on lease so it can generate cash flow. And the interesting part about AMI Kids is all the revenue generated through our leases go right directly to all of our schools around the country. So it ends up being a win-win for the donor. He's not dealing with the holding cost and the commissions involved, and taking a lesser amount than what he felt the boat is worth. And he gets to utilize a very safe alternative over the first year of contribution. Then there's a five-year carryover. But again, as far as the actual value of that contribution, that would have to be determined by an appraiser who would put in a, they would appraise the boat, and then it would be up to the donor to work with his tax advisor to see what exactly that means tax-wise as a net benefit to them.
And that all sounds fascinating. I wondered, Neil, you know, being involved in the super yacht sales business, you know, what's your involvement with this? And why do you think more owners don't get involved with this kind of thing? Is it because they don't know it exists, or are there kind of perceptions that it might be more complicated than it is?
I would say that it's perhaps the former, that the lack of exposure, the people who have represented them to sell their boats maybe don't know and fully understand the program. I would say that the second barrier has been that when I propose this kind of donation and the benefits that it represents for them, many of them just don't want to venture into a scheme where they're talking about a reduced tax liability. They, you know, there's a combination, obviously, of conservative yacht owners and maverick yacht owners. And it's not to say that it's only the maverick ones that will do this, because some very conservative yacht owners have participated in this donation program, whether it's an outright donation or whether it's a process like this where they take advantage of the reduction of their taxes. But I would say it's a combination, a lack of exposure to it, and a lack of willingness on the part of those that don't want to mess with their taxes, so to speak.
I see. So that's the kind of complications of it. And is there any, in terms of, if I'm an owner listening to this thinking, oh, it sounds interesting, are there any limitations to the kind of boats that you will accept, or the kind of things that are suitable versus unsuitable?
That's more one for Dudley. I would say that there doesn't appear to be much of a barrier. They like to work, you know, with all kinds of owners, but it has to meet their profile. I would say that, just to further the question of you know, whether people are prepared to donate or not, there are obviously a range of options in terms of donations, but there is none, there is no other organization that can hold a candle to AMI Kids in terms of their track record of being conservative, following the guidelines that the IRS lays out, and being very, very careful about who they select and making sure that the process is followed through to the end. That statistic of having done this for, you know, as long as they have, and through so many boats without being successfully challenged by the IRS, nobody's had a decision overturned, it makes it a no-brainer organization to go to for this donation process.
Absolutely. And you also accept things like, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be an owner's main yacht. It could be a support vessel or a tender or some other kind of boat that they own, right?
Yes, correct. So, in fact, recently I approached Dudley about a tender to one of the larger yachts. and you know, provided it works for the donor and it works for AMI Kids. There's, you know, it was a 36 foot rigid hold inflatable that was being considered. It so happens that that boat sold, but there's no reason why that wouldn't have been a good prospect for both sides.
And I hope I've got this right. Have you not donated a yacht yourself to AMI Kids, or have I got that wrong?
No, that is correct. In fact, we, in 2019, Dudley and I worked on a donation. It was a little bit unique. It sort of, it went through a couple of processes because it was under a foreign flag, which was new to AMI. And it was a yacht that wanted to charter, which was also a little bit new in terms of chartering offshore. So up until then, yeah, and it was one of the bigger boats that they've had. But it was, from start to finish, it was a pleasure dealing with AMI Kids. There were some understandable, you know, conservative barriers that we didn't have to break through. We just worked on them together and we achieved the goal. And it was a good result for the owner of the yacht, and it was a great result for AMI Kids. And in fact, it was through that process that I gained a greater understanding of what the charity does. And it's part of my mission now on the board of trustees of the local school in Fort Lauderdale to educate the brokerage community so that they don't just see it as a paycheck, they see it as a genuine difference to be made. That statistic of keeping kids on our side of the bars, so to speak, to prevent them from reoffending, to give them purpose, to get them a CV and an opportunity, is just, if they could truly see and understand that, I think that there'd be a lot more motivation than just earning a commission.
So let's talk, we'll come back to the yachts in a second, but let's talk a bit more about that, because we ran through it quite quickly at the beginning in terms of your success rate and things. But perhaps, Dudley, you can talk a bit more about the kind of issues these children face, what their kind of backgrounds often are, and what sort of things, because I understand that it's grown from kind of doing sort of water sports and reef projects and things to things like counselling and a much more kind of structured program of all sorts of different things that you offer these children in order to get them out of where they are currently.
We have a personal growth model, okay, that we have developed, which is part counseling, part education. So in order to receive the funding through different municipalities, state departments, or federal government, the kids have to have so many hours of classroom. And so where the significance of the contributions come into it helps us do other activities where we might have a dive trip down to the Florida Keys, or we'll have to use one of the campuses in South Carolina where we have our Winter Olympics or our whitewater rafting. So it's a great process, and it's very effective. And again, some of the programs are residential programs, some of them are day treatment programs, and it just depends on which individual school we're talking about. But as far as the personal growth model, it's a treatment for mental health. We have a behavior modification to reinforce positive behavior, and then the education end of it is to help them better themselves for the future. So it's very unique in what we do, but it's very, very successful, and we're continuing to implement more programs and structures, and it's just very successful.
I remember someone telling me in the course of the research for this, I thought this was really interesting, that you do things like, you know, lots of the children maybe have addiction issues, and there's this big dive trip every year that they all really want to go to, and they know that, you know, they can't come on the dive trip unless they have a clean drugs test or whatever. And just little things like that maybe help someone stay the right side of the law, because they want to be involved in all this cool stuff going on, which you guys make happen and do so brilliantly.
Well, yeah, and what's really cool was on the President's Dive Trip, we have a school in Cuba, New Mexico. So we had a couple of students, it was either last year or the year before, that came from Cuba, New Mexico, and they lived on a reservation. And they had never been around the salt water, nor had they ever been out on a boat or ever seen tropical fish. But in the course of 1 week, they were snorkeling, they were seeing tropical fish in John Pennekamp State Park and seeing nurse sharks. So to them, to hear them, to see their eyes lighten up at the end of the day, we've never experienced anything like this. And so giving them a purpose and the rewards, again, are these trips that help keep them to stay focused and reinforced. But then for them, through the staff, they recognize that I am worthy. I can be a positive influence in the environment in which I live.
It's really lovely to hear. What would you guys, I would be interested in what you'd both say. You know, when I've told people I'm doing an article or a podcast about owners who give their super yachts to charity, there's always this instant kind of laugh, like, oh, is that many of them? Like, who does that? You know, I think there's definitely a sort of perception that super yacht owners would never want to give away their boat for free, essentially. How do you kind of deal with that attitude? Do you hear much of that, or is the response sort of overwhelmingly positive where you are?
No, in fact, I would say that it's not quite like, I mean, there may be, like, our industry is full of whispers. So, you know, I'm sure there is a school of thought there that says, yeah, these guys, you know, don't want to do that. But you'll find that the vast majority of them have a very active philanthropical program. They have foundations, they have things like that. And there are a lot of demands on them. So this is one way that they can actually go out of their traditional annual giving and make a difference. So I would say that if they can overcome, you know, their concerns about the tax angle, or indeed if they're just, you know, wanting to donate the boat, this is a perfect way to do it. And I'm sure that Dudley can speak about a number of owners that don't even go near their tax return when they make the donation. They just want it to benefit the organization. So I would say that, and increasingly so, there are a number of organizations that I alluded to earlier that have, you know, some questionable results in terms of challenging the way they do their donations. But you know, AMI Kids is, you know, is so legitimate and so above board that I think that, you know, and there are some very, very well-known people that are very high profile that have no problem with doing this. So I would say you know, it's growing in interest and popularity for sure.
And Charlotte, convenience is becoming more and more of a factor all the time. That there are so many people, when you first mention donation, they'll say, oh my God, I don't even talk about that. It's too scary. It's too risky. Well, you know, and over the years, what we found is some of the most brilliant CPAs and tax advisors that we've worked with, we have never, that I know of, the clients have never been advised not to go the route of contribution because of our integrity, of our transparency. And when you take the steps that we do to ensure that it's a safe alternative, we put an awful lot of energy into transforming troubled lives. We put the same energy into making sure that every contribution that we've received will follow strict protocol and not be an issue for the donor down the road. And we've had many donors who have given us sometimes 3, 4, 5 vessels over a period of 20 years.
And speaking about kind of timeframes, I wondered, how have you seen the organization change? Because obviously it's expanded hugely, but are there other changes that you've noticed?
As far as changes in the tax structure?
I meant, to be honest, in changes in terms of the charity and what it's doing and how it operates. But that would be interesting as well, if that kind of helps allay some myths around it.
Well, it's, you know, when you hear the word donation, it's scary because there's several organizations that do what we do. But where the rubber meets the road, it's not so much the receiving organization that receives the boats. It's how they continue to keep ownership and the transparency of the contribution itself. So when you're working with AMI Kids, our lease that we use is what's known as a true operating lease. It's defined by the FASB 13 guidelines, and it can't be construed as an agreement for title. So just like leasing a car, you put a small percentage down, you make payments over a period of time, and then you have the opportunity to purchase the vehicle outright. We do the same with boats. So the transparency that we use has never been an issue for any of the tax advisors that we work with.
And is this something that, because, you know, I've been researching charities elsewhere, is this something that is a sort of unique system that works in the States, but there isn't necessarily a kind of Mediterranean equivalent, or do you not know about that?
We've received boats, as Neil knows, that have been overseas, that are flagged in Marshall Islands or Caymans or whatever. And we've received boats that are European power, you know, 50 Hertz instead of 60. So, but that hasn't been a challenge for us. You asked the question earlier, the type of vessels we would like. We're pretty much open to anything, but the most important thing is we can't take on someone else's headache. And what we're looking for is marketable vessels that may be a challenge to sell because of the amount of money that the owner is trying to achieve, which is very unrealistic. And as we all know in the brokerage community, it's hard to convince somebody that their boat is not worth what they really think it is. However, through the appraisal process, it just might be. But we're not in a position to take a $2 or $3 or $4 million boat that needs $5 million worth of refit, because any vessel that we take, it has to, once we complete our material improvements, the individual lessee is going to be chartering the boat from us or leasing it from us for a period of 3 years. And they have to be able to acquire insurance for the vessel and then showing us as lost payee and co-insured.
And out of interest, presumably the kids aren't doing all their marine classes on super yachts. What boats do you use for them, or are they?
Well, and see, we have our own boat yard in St. Petersburg, Florida, and we're limited to what boat, you know, the size of the vessel we can haul. But we do have kids involved. Some of our programs are right on the water. And the program in Miami, for example, they have a great dive program. They're also involved with the Florida Reef program down in the Florida Keys. We have schools in Jacksonville. And so as far as the smaller boats, we've received boats as an outright sale. So not necessarily a vessel that is going to be in the lease program that needs to be at least worth several hundred thousand dollars for us to enter into the lease program. But we've also received vessels that people have left them in our will for us, which is pretty amazing too, because when you look at an owner, an individual who's had the boat in their family for 15 or 20 years and the heartache of selling the boat because it's become the family's legacy, however, to be able to gift it to us in their will, it also takes away all the hardship for the family when one of the individuals pass.
I think that's really nice. And also, I know it's such a thing that owners worry about, what will happen to their kind of pride and joy when they're not around anymore, and how lovely to think that you know it's going to be used well and to be kind of bringing lots of people joy, kind of however way you cut it.
Yeah. You know, there's a fellow that was over in Stewart, and he had a large Hatteras, and I met him several years ago, and he was very intrigued by all of our schools. He lived in Virginia, and he was aware of some of our programs, and he just thought it was the greatest thing in the world. But Angus was, when I first met him, he was in his early 90s, and then later on, several years later, he'd say, "Dudley, I don't buy green bananas anymore," but he said, "I still want to give you my boat. However, my boat gives me my purpose to live." So Angus would visit his boat all the time, and he said, "What I am going to do, I've talked to our estate planning, and when I go home, you're going to get a call from the estate attorneys, and you will have our vessel." And that's exactly what happened. It was really amazing.
Yeah. And is that, presumably that's the kind of exception, and most people donate them to, you know, because they're moving on to another boat, or do you get quite a significant number through wills?
The once individuals recognize that we're not just a donation outfit, that all the money goes to our schools, and they recognize the value, it's pretty interesting, because a lot of the donors who, after someone gives us a boat, we'll offer them now it's a virtual tour because of the pandemic that we've been dealing with, but we'll have them visit one of our schools. And once they recognize what AMI is all about, they so much want to get involved. And quite often they do get involved with annual funding or whatever it may be, and supporting different schools for different purposes, as Neil found out in Fort Lauderdale.
What happened in Fort Lauderdale? You just mean the owners that had bought the boat?
I was able to approach a number of my clients whose sort of, let's call it, their giving schedule was completely full. And, you know,
giving schedule sounds crazy, yeah. But I know what you mean.
And in fact, you know, one of the people that I know who's, the money is very, very new for them, you know, and at a barbecue one evening, I asked her, you know, what's been the greatest challenge? And she said the demands for giving have been very, very tough. And so I think that it's been pretty easy for me to approach some of our other clients that are, you know, completely unrelated to sales, that are in management or charter, and you know, introduce them to the program and give them the option, and they've all come forward. It's been great. And for me, you know, a feel-good part of it was, and it's just at the beginning, but involving some of the leaders in our community down here to offer something that's after these programs. The programs are what can keep the kids, you know, from reoffending and keep them out of incarceration. But after that, when they've got a CV in their hand, to get them into some kind of not even a cadetship, but some kind of an apprentice program at the shipyards with any one of the vendors that supply services to our industry, to get them involved, either as crew or as employees of these manufacturers and service providers to our industry. It's a fantastic opportunity for us at the local school here in Fort Lauderdale. It doesn't work for many of the schools around the country, but in our industry, there's plenty of opportunity for these kids to go the next step after the program and get a job, and as Dudley mentioned earlier, to get a purpose in life and get a different direction.
That's really lovely. One of the last questions I was going to ask is actually during both your involvement with AMI Kids and everything you've seen happen, what's been the most rewarding moment for you? If you can pinpoint a specific case or a transaction or something that has happened while you've been there that you think, God, this is why I do this. This is why I'm involved.
I'll go first. You've got more stories than I do, Dudley, but I would say that I visited the school here in Fort Lauderdale for the first time and met some of the people that are involved. And there was nobody there, you know, because it was a salary. They were all there with a purpose. And some of the most heart-rending moments is, you know, the kids are not actors and actresses that give their testimonies, but to listen to their testimonies, to have come from a situation with no hope and no future to a future is remarkable.
Wow. Very nice, Neil. I've got a couple of short stories I'd like to share. I helped open Jacksonville Marine Institute, which was back in the early 70s. And there was a young man who, I was a seamanship instructor at the time, and Bobby Nordine was one of our students. And he wasn't necessarily a difficult kid, but, you know, most of the kids that we receive are all making poor choices at some point in their life. And Bobby got very involved with me working on boats and helping with the seamanship class and everything else. And in fact, at the time we would run reward trips over to the Bahamas. So the kids would have to have a certain point score, and would bring up one of the donated boats down to Fort Lauderdale. And then the different schools from the different states would send their best kids down to Fort Lauderdale, would go over to the Bahamas for a week and snorkel and scuba dive and learn marine sciences. So it was their reward, and it gave them that that carrot to stay focused so that they could be more involved in other things. But in the case of Bobby Nordin, what was really cool was after he graduated a few years later, he opened up his own boat building company called Nordin Custom Yachts. And ironically, 5 years after he opened it, someone donated their boat, which is a Nordin 42, back to AMI Kids. So you talk about a complete circle. It was amazing. And then there's a young man just recently at one of our conferences. They choose kids to stand up and give their testimony. And this young man stood up and shared how he had been separated from his mother at birth because she was a heroin addict. And I think it was he lived in 24, 26 foster homes growing up. And when he was arrested again at 15 in Panama City, the judge said, son, I'm going to give you an opportunity to change your life. So he went to our program in Panama City, where he completed his high school equivalency, got his GED, and graduated from the program, went on to junior college, and he stood there crying, saying, held up a certificate, and he had a scholarship to law school. And he said, when I went to AMI Kids, I didn't feel like I had a purpose at all in life. But he said, today, I owe my life to AMI Kids.
Oh, that's a lovely story. Well, yeah, what incredible examples of the amazing success that you guys have achieved. That's probably a good place to leave it. I guess I had two more questions. One is, what are the ambitions going forward, given that you're already in so many different states and, you know, taking on so many kids? Is the ambition to keep expanding and keep growing, or to just maintain what you have? And the next is, if there are people listening to this that want to get involved, want to find out more and kind of take those first steps, how do they do that?
As far as our ambition moving forward, we have a staff of almost 1,000 people, and we're constantly striving to achieve, to offer more services to the community. When you consider the kids that we're dealing with and the success that we have had, it's a great role model to get involved with, especially when you look at the challenges that we have throughout our country right now in the different school systems, and AMI Kids being such a positive influence in their lives. And the 77% of those that complete our programs do not reoffend, and within a year tells a story in and itself. So yes, we will continue growing. We hope to offer more services. We're dealing with the government right now for food servicing, for carpenter shops, and as Neil said, trying to get kids more involved in the marine industry. So there's a lot of things in the process of taking place. So, and what was your second question?
Just how people can find out a bit more, and if they're listening, they found it interesting, they'd like to, I don't know, sit down with the tax advisor and you guys and work something out.
Sure, absolutely. What we do is we'll, as I've worked with Neil in many different transactions, what I call a letter of introduction. And the purpose of it is to give it to, I can send it through Neil or send it to somebody. And it gives a brief background. It gives a link to our website. And it shares who we are, our success rate, and it's a one-page document, but it also introduces the process and the commitment that AMI will make on any given donation. So it's called, you know, I call it planting a seed, but it's an opportunity to share and expose a client with the opportunity. And quite often, you know, we've all mentioned, contribution can be a scary word. However, when you use it in the context of, you know, if we're not successful in finding that individual who's willing to pay the money that you feel your boat deserves, then there's a very safe alternative. And AMI Kids is very much a safe alternative for anyone utilizing a tax deduction.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it. Safe, but also a fantastic idea. So hopefully people who've listened to this will want to follow up with you guys and get involved. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Sure. Enjoy the rest of the week.
And you do the same, and hopefully we can be of service.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.